I was so preoccupied with getting the stupid bone back from Coco, because I was supposed to have it, not her, that I didn't see how it started. I just registered that suddenly the fight I think we'd all known was coming was already happening. Normally, a fight with Top Dog was over quickly, the lower status dog accepting his punishment for challenging the order. But this horrible battle, loudly joined and viciously savage, seemed to last and last. The two dogs clashed with their forelegs off the ground, each vying to obtain the higher position, their teeth flashing in the sun. Their yowling was the most ferocious and terrifying thing I had ever heard. Top Dog went for his usual grip on the back of the neck, where control could be exerted without doing permanent damage. But Spike shook and snapped and bit until he had Top Dog's snout in his mouth. Though it had cost Spike a bloody tear under his ear, he now had the advantage over Top Dog, forcing our leader's head lower and lower toward the ground. The pack did nothing, could do nothing, but pant and circle anxiously. But the gate swung open and Bobby came running in, pulling a long hose behind him. A jet of water hit both dogs.
"Hey, cut it out, hey!" he shouted.
Top Dog went limp, acceding to Bobby's authority, but Spike held on, ignoring the man.
"Spike!"
Bobby yelled. He thrust his nozzle forward and blasted Spike right in the face with it, blood flying into the air. Finally, Spike broke away, shaking his head to get it out of the spray, and the look he turned on Bobby was murderous. Bobby backed away, holding the hose out in front of him.
"What happened? Was it the new one? El Combatiente?" Carlos called, coming into the yard. "Sí, este perro será el problema," Bobby replied.
Señora joined the men in the yard, and after much conferring they called Top Dog over and tended to his wounds with a sharp-smelling chemical that I instantly associated with the nice lady from the cool room. Top Dog squirmed and licked and panted, his ears back, when Carlos dabbed something on the small cuts along his face. I never thought Spike would allow the same treatment, but he stood without protest when they worked on the cut under his ear. He seemed accustomed to it somehow, accepting the chemical smell as something that happened after a fight. The next several days were agony. None of us knew where we stood anymore, especially the males. Spike was unquestionably the leader now, a message he enforced by challenging every single one of us head to head in the yard. Top Dog had done the same, but not like this. For Spike, the most minor infraction was cause for discipline, and most punishment included a swift, painful nip. When play became too boisterous and too intrusive on Top Dog's area, he had always issued a cold warning in the form of a stare, perhaps a growl. Spike spent his day on patrol and would snap at us for no reason whatsoever. There was a black energy in him, something strange and mean. When the males jockeyed for new positions in the pack, challenging each other, Spike was there, and too often would himself get involved, seemingly unable to hold back from plunging into the fray. It was unnecessary and distracting, causing so much tension that minor skirmishes began breaking out among us, fights for things that had been long ago decided, such as position at the food trough or who would get to lie in the part of the yard turned cool by the leaky water faucet. When Coco and I played our game, where I had the rubber bone and she'd try to steal it, Spike would come over, growling, and force me to drop the prize at his feet. Sometimes he would carry the bone back to his corner, ending the play until I could find another toy. And other times he would sniff at it contemptuously and leave it lying in the dirt. And when Carlos brought in his sack of bones, Spike didn't even bother to run over to see if he'd be given one. He'd wait until there were no men in the yard, and then simply take what he wanted. Spike left some of the dogs alone, such as Roddy and Top Dog, and oddly fast. But whenever I was lucky enough to sink my teeth into one of Carlos's delicious treats, I was resigned to the fact that Spike would soon be chewing on it instead. It was the new order. We might be having trouble figuring out the rules, but we knew who made them, and we all accepted them. Which was why I was so surprised when Fast took Spike on. It was, of course, because of Sister. In a rare coincidence, the three siblings, Fast, Sister, and I, were standing by ourselves in the corner, investigating a bug that had crawled in from under the fence. Being in such free and simple association with my old family was so relaxing, especially after the stress-filled past few days, that I pretended that I had never seen anything more fascinating than a tiny black insect raising microscopic pincers as if daring the three of us to fight. Thus distracted, none of us noticed Spike until he was upon us, and his quick, silent attack on Sister's haunches drew an instant, frightened whelp from her. I instantly slunk to the ground. We'd been doing nothing wrong. But Fast couldn't take any more, and he lashed back at Spike, teeth flashing. Sister darted away, but I, propelled forward by a rage I'd never felt before, joined Fast in battle, the two of us snarling and biting. I tried to leap up and grab a hunk of Spike's back, but he turned and slashed at me, and as I stumbled backward, his jaws clamped down on my foreleg, and I let out a scream. Fast soon found himself pinned to the ground, but I wasn't paying attention. The pain in my leg was agonizing, and I limped off, still crying. Coco was there licking at me anxiously, but I ignored her, making a beeline for the gate. And just as I knew he would, Bobby opened the gate and came into the yard, his hose in his hand. The fight was over. Fast had made peace, and Sister was hiding behind the railroad ties. So it was my leg that drew his attention. Bobby knelt in the dirt.
"Good dog, Toby. Okay, boy," he told me.
I gave my tail a feeble wag, and when he touched my paw, sending a searing pain all the way up to my shoulder, I licked him in the face to let him know I knew he hadn't done it on purpose. Signora went with us to see the nice lady in the cool room. Bobby held me down while she poked me with the same chemical-smelling needle she'd used on me before, and then the pain in my leg didn't bother me any more. I lay drowsily on the table while the lady tugged on my leg, listening to her voice as she spoke to Bobby and Signora. I could feel her concern, her caution, but couldn't make myself care as long as Signora stroked my fur and Bobby leaned into me to hold me still. Even as Signora drew in her breath when the nice lady in the cool room said, "Permanent damage," I didn't so much as raise my head. I just wanted to lie on the table forever, or at least until dinner. When I got back to the yard, I was wearing the stupid cone collar again, and I sported a hard lump of something encasing my wounded foot. I wanted to tear into the lump with my teeth, but not only did the collar look ridiculous, it also prevented me from getting at my foot. I could only walk on three legs, which Spike seemed to find amusing, because he came over to me and knocked me down with his chest. "Fine, Spike, go ahead. You are the ugliest dog I've ever seen." My leg hurt all the time, and I needed to sleep, and usually Coco came over and rested her head on me as I did so. Twice a day, Bobby came in and gave me a treat, and I pretended not to notice that there was something bitter inside the roll of meat, though sometimes instead of swallowing it, I waited a bit and then spat it out, a small white thing the size of a pea. I was still wearing the stupid collar the day all the men came. We heard several doors slamming in the driveway, so we took up our usual chorus of barking, though many of us went quiet when we heard Signora shriek.
"No, no, you can't take my dogs!"
The grief in her voice was unmistakable, and Coco and I nuzzled each other in alarm. What was going on? The gate swung open, and several men cautiously entered the yard, carrying the familiar poles with them. Several held metal canisters out in front of them and were braced as if expecting an attack. Well, whatever this game was, most of us were willing to play. Coco was one of the first to approach, and she was snagged and pulled without resistance out through the gate. Most of the rest of the pack followed, lining up willingly, though several hung back. Sister, Fast, Spike, Top Dog, and myself, because I just didn't feel like limping over to them. If they wanted to play, let them play with Spike. Sister broke into a run around the perimeter of the yard, as if expecting a hole to open. Fast went with her at first, and then stopped in despair, watching her panicked, pointless flight. Two men closed in on her and captured her with a rope. Fast let them take him right away, so that he'd go with Sister. And Top Dog stepped forward with dignity when they called to him. Spike, though, fought the loop, growling savagely and snapping at them. The men yelled, and one of them directed a thin stream of liquid from his canister at Spike's face, the scent instantly burning my nose from all the way across the yard. Spike stopped fighting and fell to the ground, his paws over his snout. They dragged him out, and then came to me.
"Nice, doggy. You hurt your leg, boy?"
one of the men asked. I gave my tail a feeble wag and ducked my head a little to make it easier for him to slip the loop over my head, which took a bit of doing because of my stupid plastic collar. Once outside the fence, I was upset to see Signora crying, struggling against Carlos and Bobby. Her sadness came off her and washed into me, and I pulled against the noose, wanting to go comfort her. One of the men tried to hand Signora a paper, but she threw it on the ground.
"Why do you do this? We're not hurting anyone," Bobby shouted. His anger was clear and frightening. "Too many animals, poor conditions," the man with the paper said.
He too radiated anger, and everyone was very tense and stiff. I noticed that his clothes were dark and that he had metal flashing on his chest.
"I love my dogs," Signora wailed. "Please don't take them from me."
Signora was not angry. She was sad and afraid.
"Inhumane,"
the man replied. I was mystified. Seeing the entire pack outside the yard, led one by one to cages on the trucks, was very disorienting. Most of us had our ears back and our tails submissively low. I was next to Roddy, whose deep, heavy woofing filled the air. My comprehension did not improve when we arrived at our destination, which smelled a little like the place with the nice lady in the cool room, but was hot and filled with loud, anxious dogs. I followed willingly and was somewhat disappointed to find myself shoved into a cage with Fast and Top Dog. I would have preferred Coco or even Sister, though my fellow males were as cowed as I was and regarded me without hostility. The barking was deafening, yet above it all I heard the unmistakable snarl of Spike in full attack, followed by a sharp squeal of pain from some unfortunate canine. Men yelled, and then a few minutes later Spike was led past us at the end of a pole, disappearing down a hallway. A man stopped in front of our cage.
"What happened here?" he asked. The other man, the one who had just led Spike away, stopped and regarded me without interest. "Dunno."
From the first man I sensed a caring, tinged with sadness, but from the second man there was nothing but disinterest. The first man opened the door and gently probed my leg, pushing Fast's face away.
"This is ruined," he said. I tried to communicate to him that I was a much better dog without the stupid collar on.
Unadoptable, the first man said.
We got too many dogs,
the second man said. The first man reached inside the cone and smoothed my ears back. Though I felt disloyal to Signora, I licked his hand. He mostly just smelled of other dogs.
Okay, the first man said.
The second man reached in and helped me jump to the ground. He slipped the loop of rope around me and led me back to a tiny hot room. Spike was there in a cage, while two other dogs I'd never met paced loose outside Spike's cage, giving it a wide berth.
Here, wait.
The first man was at the door. He reached down and unsnapped the collar, and the air that rushed at my face was like a kiss.
They hate those things.
Whatever, the second man said.
They shut the door behind them. One of the new dogs was an old female, who sniffed my nose without much interest. Spike was barking, making the other dog, a younger male, nervous. With a groan, I slid down to lie on the floor. A loud hiss filled my ears, and the young male began to whine. Suddenly, Spike toppled to the floor with a crash, his tongue sliding out of his mouth. I regarded him curiously, wondering what he was up to. The old female slumped nearby, her head coming to rest against Spike's cage in a manner I was astounded he would allow. The young male whined, and I regarded him blankly, then shut my eyes. I felt overwhelmed with a fatigue as heavy and oppressive as when I was a small puppy and my brothers and sister would lie on top of me, crushing me. That's what I was thinking about as I began to sink into a dark, silent sleep, being a puppy. Then I thought of running wild with Mother, and of Signora's caresses, and of Coco and the yard. Unbidden, the sadness I'd felt from Signora washed through me, and I wanted to squirm up to her and lick her palms and make her happy again. Of all the things I'd ever done, making Signora laugh seemed the most important. It was, I reflected, the only thing that gave my life any purpose.
Chapter 5.
At once, everything was both strange and familiar. I could clearly remember the loud, hot room, Spike filling the air with his fury, and then abruptly falling into a slumber so deep it was as if he'd opened a gate with his mouth and run away. I remembered becoming sleepy, and then there was the sense that much time had passed, the way a nap in the afternoon sun will span the day, and suddenly it will be time for the evening feed. This nap, though, brought me not just to a new time, but to a new place. Familiar was the warm, squirming presence of puppies on either side of me. Familiar, too, was the shoving clamber for a turn at the teat, and the rich, life-giving milk that was the reward for all the pushing and climbing. Somehow, I was a puppy again, helpless and weak, back in the den. But when I took my first bleary look at the face of my mother, she wasn't the same dog at all. Her fur was a light color, and she was larger than... well, then Mother. My brothers and sisters, 7 of them, shared the same light-colored fur, and when I examined my forelegs, I realized that I matched the rest of the litter as well. And not only were my legs no longer dark brown, they stretched out from me in perfect proportion to the rest of my body also. I heard a lot of barking and smelled many dogs nearby. But this wasn't the yard. When I ventured from the den, the surface beneath my pads was rough and hard, and a wire fence abruptly ended my exploration after 6 yards. It was a cage with a wire top and a cement floor. The implications of all this made me weary, and I stumbled back to the den, climbed up on top of a pile of siblings, and collapsed. I was a little puppy again, barely able to walk. I had a new family, a new mother, and a new home. Our fur was uniformly blonde, our eyes dark. My new mother's milk was far richer than what had come from my first mother. We lived with a man who came by with food for my mother, which she gulped down quickly before returning to the den to keep us warm. But what about the yard, and Signora, and Fast, and Coco? I could remember my life very clearly, and yet everything was different now, as if I had started over. Was that possible? I recall Spike's outraged barking, and how, as I fell asleep in that hot room, I was seized with an inexplicable question, a question of purpose. This didn't seem like the sort of thing a dog should think about, but I found myself returning to the issue often, usually as I was just dozing off for an irresistible nap. Why? Why was I a puppy again? Why did I harbor a nagging feeling that as a dog, there was something I was supposed to do? Our enclosure didn't offer much to look at, and there was nothing fun to chew on except each other. But as my brothers and sisters and I became more aware, we discovered that there were more puppies in a kennel to the right. Tiny, energetic little guys with dark markings and hair that stuck up all over the place. On the other side was a slow-moving female, all alone, with a hanging belly and distended teats. She was white with black spots, and her coat was very short. She didn't walk around much and seemed pretty uninterested in us. About a foot of space separated the two kennels, so all we could do was smell the little puppies next to us, though they looked like they'd be fun to play with. Straight ahead was a long strip of lawn that beckoned with sweet odors of moist earth and rich green grass. But we were prevented from going out there by the locked door to the cage. A wooden fence encircled both the grassy area and the dog cages. The man wasn't anything like Bobby or Carlos. When he ventured into the kennel area to feed the dogs, he didn't speak much to any of us, radiating a bland indifference so at odds with the kindness of the men tending the dogs in the yard. When the puppies in the kennel next to us rushed over to greet him, he pushed them away from the dinner bowl with a grunt, letting the mother have access to her food. We were less coordinated in our attack and usually didn't manage to tumble our way to the cage door before he'd already moved on, and our mother let us know we were not to share her meal. Sometimes the man would be talking when he moved from cage to cage, but not to us. He spoke softly, focused on a piece of paper in his hands. "Yorkshire Terriers, week or so," he said one time, looking in at the dogs in the cage to our right. He stopped in front of our pen and peered inside. "Golden Retrievers, probably 3 weeks yet, and got a Dalmatian ready to pop any day." I decided my time in the yard had prepared me to dominate the puppies in my family, and was irritated they didn't feel the same way. I'd maneuvered to grab one the way Top Dog had grabbed Roddy, and then two or three of my siblings would jump on top of me, not understanding the point of the whole thing at all. By the time I'd fought them off, the original target of my attentions would be off wrestling with someone else, as if it were all some kind of game. When I tried a menacing growl, though, I sounded ridiculously non-threatening, my brothers and sisters joyously growling back. One day, the spotted dog next to us drew our attentions. She was panting and pacing nervously, and we instinctively hung close to our mother, who was watching our neighbor intently. The spotted dog ripped up a blanket, shredding it with her teeth, and circled around several times before lying down with a gasp. Moments later, I was shocked to see a new puppy lying by her side, covered in spots and cloaked in a slippery-looking film, some kind of sack that the mother immediately licked off. Her tongue pushed the little puppy over, and after a minute, it groggily crawled toward its mother's teats, which reminded me that I was hungry. Our mother sighed and let us feed a while before she abruptly stood up and walked away, one of my brothers dangling along for a second before dropping off. I jumped on him to teach him a lesson, which wound up taking a lot of time. When next I glanced over at the spotted dog, there were 6 more puppies. They looked spindly and weak, but the mother didn't care. She licked them, guiding them to her side, and then lay quietly while they fed. The man came and entered the cage where the newborns lay sleeping, looking them over before turning and walking away. Next, he opened the door to the furry-looking puppies in the kennel to the right of ours, and released them into the grassy area. "No, not you," he said to the mother, blocking her way as she tried to follow. He shut her in, and then put bowls of food down for the puppies, which they climbed in and licked off each other. These idiots wouldn't last a day in the yard. The mother sat behind her cage door and whimpered until her brood had quit feeding, and then the man led her out to join her pups. The hairy little dogs came over to our cage door to sniff us, finally going nose to nose with us after living next door for these past few weeks. I licked at the goop on their faces while one of my brothers stood on my head. The man left the puppies running free while he departed out a gate in the wooden fence that was exactly like the one Carlos and Bobby always accessed to enter the yard. I watched jealously as the puppies ranged up and down the tiny patch of grass, sniffing hello to the other cage dogs and playing with each other. I was tired of being inside the pen and wanted to get out and explore. Whatever was the purpose in my new life, this didn't feel like it. After a few hours, the man returned, carrying another dog who looked exactly like the mother of the hairy puppies who were running free, except that he was a male. The man shoved the mother back into her pen and dropped the male in with her before shutting the gate, locking them in together. The male seemed pretty glad to see the mother, but she snarled at him when he jumped on her from behind. The man left the fence gate open behind him, and I was surprised at the feeling of longing that swept through me as I peered at the tiny sliver of outside world visible on the other side of the fence. If I were ever running free in the grass, I knew I would head right out that open gate. But naturally, the puppies who currently had that option didn't do anything about it. They were too busy wrestling. The mother raised her paws up on the cage door and cried softly as the man methodically rounded up her puppies and carried them out the gate. Soon they were all gone. The mother dog paced back and forth in her cage, panting, while the male in the cage with her lay there and watched. I could feel her distress, and it unsettled me. Night fell, and the mother dog let the male lie with her. They seemed to know each other, somehow. The male was only in there for a few days before he, too, was taken away. And then it was our turn to be let out. We tumbled out joyously, lapping up the food that was set out for us by the man. I ate my fill and watched my brothers and sisters go crazy, as if they'd never seen anything so exciting before as a bunch of dog food bowls. Everything was wonderfully moist and rich, not at all like the dry and dusty dirt in the yard. The breeze was cool and carried with it the tantalizing scent of open water. I was sniffing the succulent grass when the man returned to release our mother. My siblings bounded over to her, but I didn't because I'd found a dead worm. Then the man left, and that's when I started thinking about the gate. There was something wrong with this man. He didn't call me Toby. He didn't even talk to us. I thought of my first mother, the very last time I saw her, escaping the yard because she couldn't live with humans, not even with someone as loving as Signora. But the man didn't love us at all. My gaze focused on the doorknob in the gate. There was a wooden table next to the door. By climbing up on a stool, I was able to get on the table, and from there I was just able to stretch out and put my mouth on the metal knob, which instead of being round was a strip of metal, a handle. My tiny teeth weren't very useful in getting a purchase on the thing, but I did my best to manipulate it the way Mother had the night she fled from the yard. Soon I lost my balance and toppled to the ground, the gate still locked. I sat and barked at it in frustration, my voice a tiny yip. My brothers and sisters raced over to jump on me in their usual fashion, but I turned from them in irritation. I was in no mood to play. I tried it again. This time I put my front paws on the knob to keep from tumbling to the ground, and as I did so, it fell away beneath me, so that my whole body hit the lever on my way down. I landed on the sidewalk with a grunt. To my astonishment, the gate edged ajar. I shoved my nose into the crack and pushed, and it swung wider. I was free. I eagerly scampered out into the open, my little legs tripping over themselves. A dirt path lay right in front of me, two tracks dug into sandy soil. I instinctively knew that was the way to go. After I'd run a few feet, I stopped, sensing something. I turned and looked back at my new mother, who was sitting just inside the open gate, watching me. I remembered Mother back in the yard, glancing once at me before heading back out into the world. My new mother wouldn't be joining me, I realized. She was staying with the family. I was on my own. Yet not for a moment did I hesitate. I knew from past experience that there were better yards than this, with loving people who would stroke my fur with their hands, and I knew that the time for suckling at my new mother's teat was at an end. It was just how it was supposed to work, a dog eventually separated from its mother. But mostly I knew an opportunity was in front of me that was irresistible, a whole new world to be explored, with long, if somewhat clumsy, legs. The dirt track eventually led to a road, which I decided to follow, if for no other reason than the fact that it led straight into the wind, which was bringing me wonderful new scents. Unlike the yard, which had always been parched, I smelled damp, rotting leaves and trees and pools of water. I skipped forward, the sun in my face, happy to be free, off on an adventure. I heard the truck coming long before I saw it, but was so busy trying to catch an amazing winged bug, I didn't even look up until the door slammed. A man with wrinkled, tanned skin and muddy clothes knelt down, his hands out in front of him. "Hey there, little fella," he called. I regarded him uncertainly. "You lost, fella? You lost?" Wagging, I decided he must be okay. I trotted over to him and he picked me up, holding me high over his head, which I didn't appreciate very much. "You're a pretty little fella. You look like a purebred retriever. Where'd you come from, fella?" The way he was speaking to me reminded me of the first time Signora called me Toby. I instantly understood what was happening. Just as the men had pulled my first family from the culvert, this man had taken me from the grass, and now my life would be what he decided it would be. Yes, I decided, my name could be Fella. I was thrilled when he sat me down inside the front of the truck right beside him. The front seat! The man smelled like smoke, and he had an eye-watering tang to him that reminded me of when Carlos and Bobby would sit out in the yard at a small table and talk and hand a bottle to each other. He laughed when I tried to climb up to lick his face, and he continued to chuckle as I squirmed around in the narrow places of the truck, taking in rich, strange odors. We bumped along for a while, and then the man stopped the truck. "We're in the shade here," he told me. I looked around blankly. A building with several doors was directly in front of us, and from one of them came strong chemical smells, exactly like those coating the man. "I'm just going to stop for one drink," the man promised, rolling up the windows. I didn't realize he was leaving until he'd slipped out and shut the door behind him, and I watched in disillusionment as he entered the building. What about me? I found a cloth strap and chewed on it for a little while, until I got bored and put my head down to sleep. When I awoke, it was hot. The sun now came full force into the truck, the cab airless and humid. Panting, I started whimpering, putting my paws up so I could see where the man had gone. There was no sign of him. I dropped my feet, which were literally burning from the windowsill. I had never felt such heat. An hour or so went by as I paced back and forth across the scorching front seat, panting harder than I ever had in my life. I began to quiver, and my vision was swimming. I thought of the faucet in the yard. I thought of my mother's milk. I thought of the spray from the hose Bobby used to break up dog fights. Blearily, I noticed a face staring in the window at me. It wasn't the man. It was a woman with long black hair. She looked angry, and I backed away from her, afraid. When her face vanished, I lay back down, nearly delirious. I didn't have the energy to pace anymore. I had an odd heaviness in my limbs, and my paws were beginning to twitch of their own accord. And then there was a loud crash, rocking the truck. A rock tumbled past me, bouncing off the seat and falling to the floor. Clear pebbles showered down on me, and a cool kiss of air swept in over my face. I lifted my nose to it. I was limp and helpless when I felt hands slide around my body and raise me into the air, too exhausted to do anything but hang slackly in her hands. "You poor puppy! You poor, poor puppy!" she whispered. "My name is Fella," I thought to myself.
Chapter 6.
Nothing in my life has ever felt as good as the cool, clear flow of liquid that pulled me out of my dreamless sleep. The woman stood over me with a water bottle and was carefully showering me with the sweet spray. I shuddered with pleasure as the trickle painted my back and raised my mouth to lap and bite at the stream the way I'd often attacked the drizzle that fell from the faucet above the trough in the yard. A man stood nearby, and both he and the woman were watching me with concerned expressions.
"Do you think he'll be okay?" the woman asked.
"Looks like the water's doing the job," he replied. From both of them came the sort of open adoration I often felt pouring out of Signora when she stood at the fence to watch us play. I rolled on my back so the water would wash over my hot tummy, and the woman laughed.
"Such a cute puppy," the woman exclaimed.
"Do you know what kind it is?"
"Looks like a golden retriever," the man observed.
"Oh, puppy,"
the woman murmured.
"Yes, I could be puppy. I could be Fella. I could be whatever they wanted. And when the woman swept me up in her arms, heedless of the wet splat I made against her blouse, I kissed her until she closed her eyes and giggled.
"You're coming home with me, little guy. I've got someone I want you to meet."
Well, it looked like I was a front seat dog now. She held me in her lap while she drove, and I gazed up at her in gratitude. Curious about my new surroundings, I finally crawled off and explored the inside of the car, astounded at the rich, cold air coming from two vents in front of me. Against my wet fur, the air was so chilly, I actually began to tremble, and wound up climbing onto the flat floor of the other side of the car, where a soft warmth, just like mother, quickly lured me back into another nap. I woke up when the car stopped, sleepily regarding the woman as she reached down and picked me up.
"Oh, you are so cute," she whispered.
As she held me against her chest and stepped out of the car, I could feel her heart beating strongly, and I sensed something like alarm coming off of her. I yawned off the last vestiges of my nap, and after a quick squat in some grass, was ready to face whatever challenge had her so worked up.
"Ethan," she called. "Come here. I want you to meet someone."
I looked up at her curiously. We were in front of a big white house, and I wondered if there were kennels in the back, or maybe a big yard. I couldn't hear any barking, though, so maybe I was the first dog here. Then the front door of the house banged open, and a human being like I'd never seen before ran out on the porch, jumped down the cement steps, and stopped dead in the grass. We stared at each other. It was, I realized, a human child, a male. His mouth broke into a huge grin, and he spread his arms.
"A puppy!"
he sang. And we ran to each other, instantly in love. I could not stop licking him, and he could not stop giggling, and we rolled together in the grass. I guess I had never bothered to consider that there might be such a thing as a boy, but now that I had found one, I thought it was just about the most wonderful concept in the world. He smelled of mud and sugar, and an animal I'd never scented before, and a faint, meaty odor clung to his fingers, so I licked them. By the end of the day, I would know him not just by smell, but also by sight, sound, and gesture. His hair was dark, like Bobby's, but very short, and his eyes were much lighter. He had a way of turning his head to look at me, as if he were trying to hear me more than see me, and his voice bubbled with joy whenever he talked to me. For the most part, though, I was drinking in his scent, licking his face, chewing his fingers.
"Can we keep him, Mom? Can we keep him?"
the boy gasped between giggles. The woman squatted down to pet my head.
"Well, you know your dad, Ethan. He's going to want to hear that you'll take care of him."
"I will, I will."
"And that you'll walk him and feed him."
"Every day I'll walk him and feed him and brush him and give him water."
"And you have to clean up when he poops in the yard."
The boy didn't answer that one.
"I bought some puppy food at the store. Let's give him some dinner. You won't believe what happened. I had to run to the gas station and get a jug of water. The poor thing was nearly dead with heat exhaustion," the woman said.
"Want some dinner? Huh? Dinner?"
the boy asked.
"Sounded pretty good to me."
To my amazement, the boy picked me up and carried me right into the house. I had never in my life imagined such a thing was even possible. I was going to like it here just fine. Some of the floors were soft and embedded with the same animal odor I'd picked up on the boy, while other floors were slick and hard, causing my feet to skitter out from underneath me as I pursued the boy through the house. When the boy picked me up, the flow of love between us was so strong, it gave me a hollow feeling in my tummy, almost like hunger. I was lying on the floor with the boy, wrestling over a cloth, when I felt a vibration rumble through the house and heard the sound I'd learned meant the closing of a car door.
"Your father's home,"
the woman, whose name was Mom, told the boy, who was called Ethan. Ethan stood up and faced the door, and Mom came to stand beside him. I grabbed the cloth and gave it a victorious shake, but found it much less interesting without a boy attached to the other end of it. A door opened.
"Hi, Dad,"
the boy yelled. A man stepped into the room, looking back and forth between the two of them.
"Okay, what is it?"
he asked.
"Dad, Mom found this puppy,"
Ethan said.
"He was locked in a car, nearly dead from heat stroke," Mom said. "Can we keep him, Dad? He's the best puppy in the world."
I decided to take advantage of the lapse in security and dove onto the boy's shoes, biting his laces.
"Oh, I don't know. This is not a good time," the father said.
Do you know how much work a puppy is? You're only 8 years old, Ethan. It's too much responsibility. I yanked on one of the boy's laces, and it gave, sliding away from his shoes. I tried to run off with it, but it remained attached to his feet, so that it yanked me back, tumbling me head over heels. Snarling, I dove back onto the laces, grabbing them and giving them a furious shake.
"I'll take care of him, and I'll walk him and feed him and wash him,"
the boy was saying.
"He's the best puppy in the world, Dad. He's already housebroken."
Having wrestled the shoes into submission, I decided this would be a good time to take a little break, and squatted, depositing a stool along with my urine. Wow, did that get a reaction? Soon, the boy and I were sitting on the soft floor. Mom would say, "George?" And then Ethan would say, "George? Here, George. Hi, George." And then Dad would say, "Skippy?" And Ethan would say, "Skippy? Are you Skippy? Here, Skippy." It was exhausting. Later, playing out in the backyard, the boy called me Bailey.
"Here, Bailey. Here, Bailey,"
he would call, slapping his knees. When I trotted over to him, he would dash away, and we ran around and around in the backyard. As far as I was concerned, it was an extension of the game inside, and I was prepared to respond to Hornet and Ike and Butch, but it seemed like this time Bailey would stick. After another meal, the boy took me into the house. "Bailey, I want you to meet Smokey the Cat." Holding me tightly against his chest, Ethan turned so I could see, sitting in the middle of the floor, a brown and gray animal whose eyes grew big when he spotted me. This was the smell I'd been tracking. The thing was larger than me, with tiny ears that looked like they'd be fun to bite. I struggled to get down and play with this new friend, but Ethan held me tight. "Smokey, this is Bailey," Ethan said. At last he placed me on the floor, and I ran over to kiss the cat, but he drew his lips back from a set of really wicked-looking teeth and spat at me, arching his back and thrusting his puffy tail straight up into the air. I stopped, puzzled. Didn't he want to play? The musty smell coming from under his tail was delicious. I tried to inch in and give Smokey's butt a friendly sniff, and he hissed and spat and raised a paw, nails extended. "Aw, Smokey, be a nice cat. Be a nice cat." Smokey gave Ethan a baleful glare. I picked up on the boy's encouraging tone and yipped in a very welcoming fashion. But the cat remained unapproachable, even batting at my nose when I tried to lick his face. Okay, well, I was ready to play with him whenever he wanted, but I had more important things to care about than some snotty cat. Over the next several days, I learned my place in the family. The boy lived in a small room full of wonderful toys, while Mom and Dad shared a room with no toys whatsoever. One room had a basin of water I could only drink from if I climbed into it, and also had no toys unless you counted the white paper that I could pull from the wall in a continuous sheet. The rooms for sleeping were at the top of some steps that were impossible for me to climb, despite my full-sized dog legs. The food was all kept hidden in one part of the house. Every time I decided I needed to squat and relieve myself, everyone in the house went crazy, scooping me up and racing out the door with me, setting me in the grass and watching me until I'd recovered from the trauma of it all enough to continue with my business, which earned me so much praise I wondered if this was my main function in the family. Their praise was inconsistent, though, because there were some papers they'd set out for me to rip up, and if I squatted on them, I was called a good dog, too, but with relief, not joy. And, as I mentioned, sometimes when we were all in the house together, they became upset with me for doing exactly the same thing. "No!" Mom or Ethan would shout when I wet the floor. "Good boy," they'd sing when I peed in the grass. "Okay, that's good," they'd say when I urinated on the papers. I could not understand what in the world was wrong with them. Dad mostly ignored me, though I sensed he liked it when I got up in the morning to keep him company while he ate. He regarded me with mild affection, nothing like the berserk adoration flooding out of Ethan, though I could feel that was how much Dad and Mom loved the boy. Occasionally, Dad would sit at the table in the evenings with the boy, and they would talk quietly, concentrating, while sharp, pungent fumes filled the air. Dad would let me lie on his feet, since the boy's feet were too far off the ground for me to reach. "Look, Bailey, we built an airplane," the boy said after one of these sessions, thrusting a toy at me. It made my eyes water with the chemical odors, so I didn't try to take it away. Making noises, the boy ran around the house holding the toy, and I chased after him and tried to tackle him. Later, he put the thing on a shelf with other toys that faintly smelled of the same chemicals. And that was it, until he and Dad decided to build another one. "This one is a rocket, Bailey," Ethan told me, offering me a toy shaped like a stick. I turned up my nose at it. "We're going to land on the moon one day, and then people will live there, too. Wouldn't you like to be a space dog?" I heard the word dog and sensed there was a question, so I wagged. "Yes," I thought, "I would be happy to help clean the dishes." Cleaning the dishes was where the boy would put a plate of food down, and I would lick it. It was one of my jobs, but only when Mom wasn't watching. Mostly, though, my job was to play with the boy. I had a box with a soft pillow in it where the boy put me at night, and I came to understand that I was to stay in the box until Mom and Dad came in and said good night. And then the boy would let me up into his bed to sleep. If I got bored in the night, I could always chew on the boy. My territory was behind the house, but after a few days I was introduced to a whole new world. The neighborhood. Ethan would burst out the front door in a dead run, me at his heels, and we'd find other girls and boys, and they'd hug me and wrestle with me and tug toys from my mouth and throw them. "This is my dog, Bailey," Ethan said proudly, holding me up. I squirmed at the sound of my name. "Look, Chelsea," he said, offering me to a girl his size. "He is a golden retriever. My mother rescued him. He was dying in a car from heat exhaust station. When he gets old enough, I'm going to take him hunting on my grandpa's farm." Chelsea cuddled me to her chest and gazed into my eyes. Her hair was long and lighter than even mine, and she smelled like flowers and chocolate and another dog. "You are sweet. You are so sweet, Bailey. I love you," she sang to me. I liked Chelsea. Whenever she saw me, she would drop to her knees and let me pull on her long blonde hair. The dog scent on her clothing came from Marshmallow, a long-haired brown and white dog who was older than I, but still a juvenile. When Chelsea let Marshmallow out of her yard, we would wrestle for hours, and sometimes Ethan would join us, playing, playing, playing. When I lived in the yard, Senora loved me, but I now realized it was a general love aimed at all the dogs in the pack. She called me Toby, but she didn't say my name the way the boy whispered, "Bailey, Bailey, Bailey," in my ear at night. The boy loved me. We were the center of each other's worlds. Living in the yard had taught me how to escape through a gate. It had led me straight to the boy, and loving and living with the boy was my whole purpose in life. From the second we woke up until the moment we went to sleep, we were together. But then, of course, everything changed. Chapter 7. One of my favorite things to do was to learn new tricks, as the boy called them, which consisted of him speaking to me in encouraging tones and then feeding me treats
Sit, for example, was a trick where the boy would say, "Sit, Bailey, sit," and then he would climb on my rear end, forcing it to the ground, and then he would feed me a dog biscuit. Dog door, was a trick where we would go out to the garage where Dad kept his car, and the boy would shove me through a plastic flap in the side door to the backyard. Then he'd call for me, and I'd push my nose through the flap, and he'd feed me a dog biscuit. My legs, I was gratified to see, kept growing with the rest of me, so that as the nights grew cooler, I was able to keep up with the boy, even at a sprint. One morning, the dog door trick took on an entirely different meaning. The boy was up early, barely after sunrise, and Mom was running in and out of different rooms. "Take care of Bailey," Mom called at one point. I looked up from where I was giving a chew toy a serious working over, taking note of Smokey the Cat, who sat on the counter and gazed down upon me with insufferable haughtiness. I picked up the chew toy and shook it to demonstrate to Smokey what a great time he was missing out on by being so snooty. "Bailey," the boy called. He was carrying my bed, and intrigued, I followed him out to the garage. What was this game? "Dog door," the boy said to me. I sniffed his pockets but couldn't smell any biscuits, since the whole point of playing dog door was, in my opinion, the dog biscuits. I decided to turn away and lift my leg on a bicycle. "Bailey!" I felt impatience from the boy and regarded him in puzzlement. "You sleep here, okay, Bailey? You be a good dog. If you need to go to the bathroom, you go out the dog door, okay? Dog door, Bailey. I have to go to school now, okay? I love you, Bailey." The boy gave me a hug, and I licked him in the ear. When he turned, I naturally followed, but at the door to the house, he barred me from entry. "No, Bailey, you stay in the garage until I get home. Dog door, okay, Bailey? You be a good dog." He shut the door in my face. Stay? Dog door? Good dog? How are these terms, which I'd heard so often, even remotely related? And which one was stay again? None of this made any sense to me. I sniffed around the garage, which was full of wonderful smells, but I wasn't in the mood to explore. I wanted my boy. I barked, but the door to the house remained shut. So I scratched it. Still nothing. I heard some children yelling from the front of the house and ran to the big garage doors, hoping they would lift up as they sometimes did when the boy stood in front of them. But nothing happened. A loud truck of some kind swept up the voices of the children and carried them away. A few minutes later, I heard Mom's car drive off, and then the world, which had been so full of life and fun and noise, became intolerably quiet. I barked for a while, but that did nothing at all, though I did smell Smokey just on the other side of the door, smugly taking note of my predicament. I scratched the door. I chewed on some shoes. I ripped up my dog bed. I found a trash bag full of clothing, tore it open the way Mother had when we were scavenging for garbage, and strewed the clothes around the garage. I peed in one corner and pooped in the other corner. I tipped over a metal container and ate some pieces of chicken and some spaghetti and a waffle and licked out a can of fish that smelled like Smokey's breath. I ate some paper. I knocked over my water dish and chewed on it. There was nothing to do. After what seemed like the longest day of my life, I heard Mom's car pull into the driveway. Her car door slammed, and I heard running feet pound through the house. "Bailey!" the boy shouted, opening the door. I tackled him, overjoyed that we had ended this madness forever. But he stood staring at the garage. "Oh, Bailey," he said, sounding sad. Full of manic energy, I burst past him and skittered around in the house, leaping over furniture. I spotted Smokey and took off in pursuit,
chasing him up the stairs and barking when he dove under Mom and Dad's bed. "Bailey!" Mom called to me sternly. "Bad dog, Bailey!" the boy said crossly. I was astounded at this false accusation. Bad? I'd been accidentally locked in the garage, but was more than willing to forgive them. Why were they scowling at me like that, shaking their fingers at me? Moments later, I was back in the garage, helping the boy, who picked up everything I'd played with and put most of it into the trash container I'd knocked over. Mom came out and sorted through the clothing, taking some into the house with her, but no one praised me for discovering where the items had been hiding. "Dog door," the boy said crossly, but he didn't give me any treats. I was beginning